Hi everyone, it's Eric here. Real quick, as part of our ongoing monthly support campaign with Patreon, one of the support levels, one of the little perks I offered was to be a guest on Garden Fork Radio. And today we have Rick and Eric, and we also have our friend Scott, who opted for that support level. And so he's going to be a guest on the show today. If you're interested in being a guest on Garden Fork Radio through our Patreon campaign, you can find out more about that at patreon.com/gardenfork. And there'll be a link in the show information of this podcast. All right, here we go. Hey everyone, welcome to Garden Fork Radio. You're here with Scott and Rick. Welcome, guys.
Good morning. How are you, Eric?
Good. Hey, Scott.
Welcome, Scott. How are you, my friend?
Oh, not too bad. It's a little cool here today, but hopefully it'll be warm enough.
Yeah, where is it's here?
Alberta, Canada. So yay. north of Montana.
Wow.
And we actually had our biggest rain year probably for the season. I think we had about an inch and a half of rain.
In a day?
In the last about day and a half.
Wow. That's wild.
Prior to that, we've only had about 4 inches of rain since April. So it's been a fairly dry year here.
Wow. Everyone that's listening, Scott is an agronomist, and we have been emailing back and forth about what to talk about with the show. And if you go to his website, which is about.me/cowboyjunkie, there's this really cool aerial shot of I call it a crop circle. Maybe it's a field that's in the shape of a circle. But as a living, you are is it a soil scientist. Is that the right word?
Agronomist is probably the most accurate. So, and
What does an agronomist do then?
Well, agronomy is crops and soils. So anything, like it's basically anything with plants and soils involved.
Mm-hmm.
And agronomy, I think it's more of an applied science. So it's any agricultural crops is what we would generally be dealing with. And in my job, I have potatoes, wheat, barley, canola, and soybeans that I specifically deal with. But you know, it could be, you know, it depends on where you are. It's whatever the crop is that you're dealing with. So basically, like in school, so it's a science degree that you get, but you know, you take different classes in you know, in plant physiology or in some specific crop science stuff, or in soils, how soils work, or you know, that type of stuff. So,
and so you don't really go home and have like your own little garden, because that'd be like a man's holiday, right?
Actually, I do. I
do
still have
you?
My own gardens. See, that's the funny thing is that I took up the hobby of gardening. So you know, I work with plants all day, and then on evenings and weekends, and I keep working with plants. So yeah, I have my own garden. And I've noticed that with some other agronomists that I know around in the area, that they've taken up gardening. So I don't know. I think we just like our jobs. So,
well,
that's the cool thing, is that you're actually, you know, you're doing something you like for a living. So it's not like a drag to say, oh, I got to go home and do more gardening. It's like, oh yeah, I have to go home and do more gardening, but it's on a different scale. What I was really kind of impressed by was just the fact that you're doing like large scale farming, and I'm kind of intrigued by some of the technologies that you're using. Could you tell us a little bit about some of those?
Yeah, and I guess like the area that I'm working in, or the farm that I'm on, is irrigated, and this area is a semi-arid area, so mm-hmm. it's mainly. Most of the farming is either ranching, so on like large scale grazing, or is dry land. And so, you know, for dry land, you know, it's large scale, and you know, some years are good and some years aren't, depending on, you're completely dependent on the rain. We have the irrigation, and that was what developed a lot of this area, was they set up Got some large-scale irrigation set up here. And it's all through reservoirs from the mountain runoff.
From the snowmelt?
Yep, from the snowmelt. And there's, you know, they're basically just catching a lot of that, you know, those huge spring runoffs. And, you know, the rivers are still fed with a constant flow, but they're catching some of that. And there's, you know, it's, you know, they still have to let a certain amount of it flow through the rivers all the way through the system and onto the other provinces. But, you know, from what they can capture from the excess, then that's what we use for our water. So, and so those crop circles, basically when we're planted irrigated crops, we have the center pivot irrigation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's common all over the world, is using the center pivots. And so they just make a big circle.
So it's basically like a sprinkler system that has a center. There's a center column where I guess the water is pumped through that. And also it's kind of like a big ball bearing. And then there's this pole that goes out and goes in a circle, like a big compass around, and it's watering the crops. And so the crops are by design in a circle like that.
Yeah. And so there's typically on a quarter section, that's 160 acres. And wow. That's a quarter section is a half mile by a half mile. And so typically there would be seven towers, like with wheels on them.
Right.
Like that support it. And it just basically, it just goes in a circle. It usually takes, depending on what you set it for, it takes a day or 2 days to do a complete revolution. And the sprinklers are, you know, the further out on it, the more water comes out of them. They're all set to give an even amount of water. The very center is covering just a very small area, and the very outside is covering travels a long ways around. So
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah, so it's an interesting system, and I guess what, you know, you're working with a circle, so you have that component to it, but you also what's nice is that, you know, so say if you run it for three revolutions, well, by the time it's getting completed a revolution, well, then that where it's ended up needs water again, so it can kind of just keep on going. So
is there some technology to measure or monitor soil moisture content while the sprinklers are going round or anything like that?
That's basically my job, and then, you know, the other guys on the farm that actually run the equipment, they'll be checking the soil moisture too. I'll be typically checking it to about 3 feet deep. I have a what we call a Dutch auger, like it's a hand auger that I can just check to see how the soil moisture is right down to about 3 feet.
Wow.
And so we're using that and kind of, you know, knowing how, you know, the temperatures and the crop growth, and we can try to match the irrigation. And there are sensors. There's a lot of sensors that are coming out or have come out, and they're getting pretty close on being able to accurately measure the water, so the soil moisture. So
is there, when you are measuring soil moisture, is it a percentage or a ratio, and what is the ideal for the crops you're growing?
Yeah, it's kind of like each soil kind of has its own holding capacity. Like, you know, sandy soil isn't going to hold as much as loam soil. We're kind of measuring the plant available water, and it's something that you just get trained on or learn by the feel of it. Yeah, it's kind of, you know, a little bit of art, a little bit of science.
This is an amazing system because, I grew up in the high plains of Texas around Lubbock. And back when I was a kid, we'd get up, but I wasn't a farm family necessarily, but I had family that was. And we'd get up and have to shift the irrigation well piping around the farm all night long. You get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, you'd move it. And, you know, they actually hired us during the summer to come and do that. And so, yeah, you know, these systems that you just kind of flick the switch and it comes on, it goes round and round. It's absolutely amazing.
It is, and I think that's why, because, you know, we get about 130 of the 160 acres of the field irrigated, and so we have what everybody refers to as the dry corners.
And I was going to ask, what do you do with the dry corners?
For some crops, like say if you're growing wheat or canola or, you know, say any of the grains, some people, mm-hmm. if you still get a fair amount of rain or enough rain, they'll just plant it solid. And right. whatever they get from the dry corners, they'll just take. Where this farm is, we just don't get much rain. And I've noticed, like, we're not that far away from other areas. They'll plant the corners, they'll put stuff in there. But the area that I'm in, it's so dry that nobody plants them.
What is your growing season like there?
It's a very short window, and I guess you'd say fairly intensive. Like, we don't get a lot of rain, so we get a lot of sun normally. Mm-hmm. And we're more northern, so like I grew up in Ontario, like in southern Ontario, so I think I'm probably at the same Eric, you're probably at the same, what is it, latitude?
Latitude, yep.
So actually here where we are, we get an extra hour of sunlight in a day.
Nice.
In the summer. And so basically kind of the last killing frost is generally at the end of May, maybe even into, sometimes it can be early June, but it's generally end of May, you're fairly safe. And yeah. actually we're right into the zone right now where we could have our first killing frost. And wow. even 2 weeks ago, we were close. We were down to, it would be in Fahrenheit, it'd be about 38, 39. So wow. it's a very short season.
Well, one more geek thing we can move on to what you're doing in your yard, but you, you use a quadcopter in your, career.
Yeah. And those things have, exploded in use over the last couple of years. I'm just using, I have the Phantom, mm-hmm. that's kind mm-hmm. of that DJI Phantom, quadcopter. And, you know, I'm just using it to take, just to get basically a bird's eye view of the fields. And it really helps. You can see a fair amount from it. You can see if a wet area is developing or this year too, it was, being such a dry year, which is normal for us. Like that's why the irrigation was developed. But being a dry year, when the crops are relying entirely on the irrigation, you could see some rings in the fields. And so that meant that you had a nozzle was plugged or maybe wasn't set up right. So you know, you can catch things from the air that you wouldn't see from the ground
level. Yeah.
What about disease processes? Can you spot those from the air?
No, I had wondered if I could. I think basically what my conclusion is, if I can see disease from the air, then it's a long ways.
You got a problem.
But you see, I'm only looking at just I'm looking at the visual or at the mm-hmm. the main, the regular, you know, like what we see, the, I don't know what you call it, the regular color spectrum. There's a lot of different cameras that you can get that will give NDVI. Which right. is a vegetative index, a normalized something vegetative index. And that actually gives you a lot more information. You can see plant stresses before visually you could see it. And and I know that there's all kinds of sensors that are coming out on these. But, you know, right now I just have this. And to use those other, like the NDVI, those type of ones, what you have to do is you have to fly it systematically with the camera pointed straight down.
Right.
Oh yeah.
And then it stitch the images together, or you can get satellite images that give you the same thing. But then you're getting into fairly high cost, and this is a very simple way of getting into it and just seeing what you have. So.
Hey everyone, real quick, if you do us a favor, go to your computer, log on to iTunes, and write a review. A 5-star review, hopefully, of Garden Fork Radio, and if you like, Garden Fork, the TV video show as well. We have 2 podcasts on iTunes. If you would use words like DIY, food podcast, cooking, gardening, that'd be cool too, right? So go to iTunes, say nice things about us. That'll really help us in the search on iTunes so more people can find Garden Fork and listen to cool stuff. Thanks. Scott, you, in your home garden, you've built a rain collection and irrigation system, and kind of a DIY version rather than
these giant 7-stand circular sprinklers. Is that right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, the rain barrel system, we've been in our house since, about 8 years. And I had got a hold of these, 55 gallon barrels.
Yeah.
There was a factory in town, and they did, one of the things they did was bottling juice.
Mm-hmm.
And so these barrels were actually food safe, and they had been used for, apple juice.
I have a barrel like that for my sap. Yeah. It says apple juice right on it.
Yeah. So, you know, I got them. Actually, I was really lucky. I got them. I think they were charging $5 each, just wow. kind of as a nominal charge, but I got them really cheap. I've spent a lot more than that on them getting them set up. But yeah, it was nice, 'cause then I could be sure that, you know, they didn't have any
chemicals, you know, or something in them.
Any chemicals or something that I would be concerned about. So, but it's been an evolving process. And I think, you know, this year I finally got them kind of set up the way I like them. But
are the barrels right near the end of your rain gutters of your house, or are they, is the water piped to them, or?
Yeah, they you know, like they still have their top on them.
Mm-hmm.
And like I'm trying to set them up so they're fairly close, so that they're not a mosquito magnet, or that they don't, you know, they don't breed mosquitoes in them. You know, so you don't have an open open water. And then even too, like, so that then the top is closed, so you don't have animals or kids, or you don't have to concern about things getting into it. So, but basically what I figured out over the years is that, my house, the front roof and the back roof are fairly equal.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those are equal in area to the garage, which is detached, you know, about the same, they have about the same collection area.
Yep.
So basically I have two barrels at the front and two barrels at the back, and then two barrels off the garage. It goes into one and then overflows into the other, or in the garage it just comes off either side of it. And then it overflows, and that was the other thing, is that I kind of got them set up so that when they overflow, they kind of go into an area where, you know, I could use the water, like with one overflows to the large tree that I have in the yard, and then mm-hmm. the other one to some flower beds in the back. And basically they're plumbed together. Like one of the things I did is I have garden hoses off the bottom of them. I drilled a hole and tapped threads in there. So I have garden hoses off the bottom, and then they basically kind of funnel into, yeah, I use those garden splitters. Like I have a 4 splitter.
Yeah, I have those.
They feed into those, and then near each barrel, I do have a hose that comes off of them, so that if I want water right from the barrels, I can.
Kind of like on-demand, gravity-fed water.
The main use was, over the years, I figured out that the main use I wanted them for was for in the garden. This year, I had been looking at these drip irrigation systems, and actually in that post that I have, I refer to a video where they talk about making their own drip irrigation system. Like it was a university or a state, like a state university that had
mm-hmm.
made one. And what I figured, like a lot of the drip ones where they make them out of PVC, they have the holes directed right at the plants.
Right.
But mm-hmm. what I figured is I just have holes drilled every foot along the length of it. You know, this is kind of where I guess, my agronomy and gardening kind of come together, is I figured, you know, plants, they'll send the roots out to where the water is. You know, most plants are going to be able to look at least a foot or more, are going to find it.
So you don't have to get that drip tube right next to the stem of the plant.
No, and also I have wood mulch all through the garden, and I plant the rows, like I have these set up so that I plant rows perpendicular to the length to the pipe, which is kind of unconventional, but
yeah, it is.
So I figured, you know, if it happens that the middle ones do better, well, you know, that's fine. And it's only, you know, they're only going to be 18 inches away from the pipe. And I found over the years there hasn't really been much of a difference. This year I did notice a little bit the onions on the very edge didn't do so well. If I had wanted to, I thought that maybe I would do them kind of alternating, where kind of like a 90 degrees that they would kind of shoot to the side.
I noticed you don't have your rain barrels up on a stand or a block or anything. They're just sitting on the ground.
Yeah, and actually, the ones at the garage, I did build some stands.
I see
for
that
those.
Now, yeah.
Yeah.
But you're not having any pressure problems by just sitting them on the ground?
No, and you see the ones that are at the, like when the rain is done, those are all pretty equal. Like they're mm-hmm. all pretty well the same height. Those ones at the garage that are up on the pallets are at the same height as the ones at the house. So,
and everyone, yeah, we're referencing an article that Scott wrote on medium.com, and we will link to that in the show notes. I forgot to say that before. Sorry. What are some future upgrades you're going to do to the garden?
I don't have any really big upgrades right now. That's been my big project for a long
that's
time.
That's enough, right?
Our crowd's great. Great video, by the way. I like that.
You guys didn't bring it up. We've been talking for a half hour. I got no compliments about my sauerkraut.
Well, you know, maybe if you sent samples around. You know, what we need is smell-o-vision here. So you can waft the smell of sauerkraut across the waves as we talk about it. And then you had a great little chat with Real Simple, the other Eric. That's Eric with a K over at Real Simple.
Yeah.
By the way, you said that you sent me a link. He'd done a podcast on aquaponics, and yep. you said, "Well, this, you know, I know you're interested in aquaponics. This might be a little simple for you, but I thought you'd enjoy it." And I had been meaning to subscribe to Eric's podcast at Real Simple, and I had forgotten. But I went and listened to that podcast on aquaponics, and I learned so much because I had never kept tilapia before.
Uh huh.
And that guy had so much knowledge about tilapia. It was really amazing. So I appreciate it. And now I am a subscriber to Real Simple. And I wanted to mention, you guys were talking about whole house fans.
Mm-hmm.
You did a joint podcast. Well, really not a joint podcast. You kind of did a follow on. You were on his show, then he came on your show.
Yep.
And when he came on your show, he talked about just putting a little box fan up in the attic as kind of a whole house fan,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine. I have put, as I said before, a whole house fan in. We have one down in South Texas, and the one thing you have to be careful about when you put a real whole house fan in is I blew down several ceiling panels of sheetrock because I didn't have enough exit air space going out.
Right, and, right. With the box fan, I mean, with the 20-inch box fan, he's fine.
It's completely easy, but if you actually switch to a real whole industrial strength whole house fan, those things can pressurize the attic so much that you'll blow your ceiling down.
Yeah,
and that was very expensive to repair.
Huh. Any thoughts, Scott?
I hadn't thought of that, but. Well, because there's an attic fan, or there's a fan right in the roof that just draws air out of the attic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, you guys were talking about that last week, is that, you know, I just open up the hatch and just let it suck air out.
Right.
But yeah, if that's true with those whole house fans. Yeah, you'd want to check with the manufacturer, or just check with somebody to make sure you've got the exit capacity to push it out.
Yeah, I ended up putting in three turbo vents on the top of the roof to handle the exhaust from the whole house fan. So, I love those things. And I'm going to do one again here because in a ranch house with no ability to create what they call the solar chimney, where you can open the ground level windows and then the hot air flows up and goes out your second story windows or up into the attic.
Right.
They're harder to cool naturally. And so I'd like a whole house fan here eventually.
Well, cool. Yeah. So, I actually have to go. It's the Labor Day weekend here, and, we have to go visit some friends.
Our crowd's great. Great video, by the way. I like that.
You guys didn't bring it up. We've been talking for a half hour. I got no compliments about my sauerkraut.
Well, you know, maybe if you sent samples around, You know, it, what we need is smell-o-vision here. So you waft the smell of sauerkraut across the waves as we talk about it. And then you had a great little chat with Real Simple, the other Eric. That's Eric with a K over at Real Simple.
Yeah.
By the way, you said that you sent me a link. He'd done a podcast on aquaponics. And you said, well, this, you know, I know you're interested in aquaponics. This might be a little simple for you, but I thought you'd enjoy it. And I had been meaning to subscribe to Eric's podcast at Real Simple. And I had forgotten, but I went and listened to that podcast on aquaponics, and I learned so much because I had never kept tilapia before.
Uh-huh.
And that guy had so much knowledge about tilapia. It was really amazing. So I appreciate it. And now I am a subscriber to Real Simple. And I wanted to mention, you guys were talking about Whole House Fans.
Mm-hmm.
You did a joint podcast. Well, really not a joint podcast. You kind of did a follow on. You were on his show, then he came on your show.
Yep.
And when he came on your show, he talked about just putting a little box fan up in the attic as kind of a whole house fan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. I have put, as I said before, a whole house fan in. We have one down in South Texas. And the one thing you have to be careful about when you put a real whole house fan in is I blew down several ceiling panels of sheetrock because I didn't have enough exit air space going out.
Right, and, right. With the box fan, I mean, with the 20-inch box fan, he's fine.
Completely easy. But if you actually switch to a real whole industrial strength whole house fan, those things can pressurize the attic so much that you'll blow your ceiling down.
Yeah.
And that was very expensive to repair.
Huh. Any thoughts, Scott?
I hadn't thought of that, but because we have there's an attic fan, or there's a fan right in the roof that just draws air out of the attic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, you guys were talking about that last week, is that, you know, I just open up the hatch and just let it suck air out.
Right.
But yeah, that's true with those whole house fans. Yeah, you'd want to check with the manufacturer, or just check with somebody to make sure you've got the exit capacity to push it out.
So. Yeah, I ended up putting in three turbo vents on the top of the roof to handle the exhaust from the whole house fan. So but I love those things, and I'm going to do one again here because in a ranch house. With no ability to create what they call the solar chimney, where you can open the ground level windows and then the hot air flows up and goes out your second story windows or up into the attic.
Right.
They're harder to cool naturally. And so I'd like a whole house fan here eventually.
All right. I don't know what happened to the recording of the end of our talk there. So here we are with Eric with the microphone. A big thank you to Scott. He's a member of our Patreon campaign, which is a monthly support of Garden Fork. If you're interested, patreon.com/gardenfork. The link will be in the show notes for this podcast as well. If you click on the Garden Fork icon while the show is playing, there should be some links and information that show up. So thanks again, Scott. Thank you, Rick, for taking the time. And we will see you all next week, right? Make it a great day.
Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com.